From WBUR Boston, I'm Tom Ashbrook, and this is On Point. So often when we travel, we marvel at what we see. Mountains, glaciers, valleys, sunsets. My guest today, Bernie Krause, listens for the sound of rain, wind, bird life, bugs, wolves, the whole incredible natural symphony in really wild places. And he brings it home, amazingly recorded, to remind us of its glory, its power. This hour On Point, Nature's Symphony is right here. You can join the conversation. What's the sound of nature that you most love? The natural symphony you've found most abundant. And where does it take you? We're at 1-800-423-8255. That's 1-800-423-TALK. And you can comment at our website, onpointradio.org, or on Twitter and Facebook at On Point Radio. Playing behind me, a 1992 desert recording from Gray Ranch in the northern panhandle of New Mexico. The area is open and dry and filled with the sound of rock wrens and western meadowlarks, sparrows, coyotes, gray fox, red-tailed hawks, desert frogs, maybe even the thump and slither of tortoise and snake, if you listen very closely, and Bernie Krause does. Mr. Krause joins us now from Rohnert Park, California. He's traveled the world with his recording equipment, archiving sounds of creatures and their environments. His recordings have been featured in films like Apocalypse Now, The Perfect Storm, Castaway, as well as museum exhibits. He's produced more than 40 records and CDs with his recordings. His new book is The Great Animal Orchestra, Finding the Origins of Music in the World's Wild Places. Bernie Krause, welcome. It is so great to have you. Thank you very much for joining us.
Thank you, Tom.
Paint a picture of this desert scene that we're hearing.
Well, it's dry and pretty flat. It's the northern part of the Chihuahuan Sonoran Desert. It's kind of a transitional zone. And it's an area that's actually come back from a lot of devastation, overgrazing certainly, and in particular over the last, three centuries, it was pretty heavily grazed. And now it was acquired by the Nature Conservancy and put under an easement, an environmental easement, so that the land is beginning to come back and regenerate. And the soundscape that we've just heard is an example of just how beautiful that soundscape can be, the desert soundscape in particular. People think that deserts are completely dead, but they're not. They have this wonderful resonance to them that just reverberates any time you're there.
You know, I put a CD of all the sound we're going to hear in this hour on last night, and I began listening to it thinking, well, where's the music? Where's this? You know, the sort of your origins theme. And I do hear it there. But by the time it was done, I found myself in just a kind of trance at the splendor of this and somehow the depth of what it pulls up in us. You've spent decades now bringing this natural sound that we have to say some of the pure wildness that's required for the full abundance of it is really going away. But I was struck at how profoundly important somehow what this, all on its own without humans, it is, of course, but also what it draws up in us. What have you found in those years, Bernie?
Well, you know, Tom, I think it's part of our DNA. And these ancient sounds, this atavistic symphony that we're listening to and that you're talking about, really comes from a place that goes way into our distant past. And one of the interesting things about that and what you in your comment just a minute ago is that, you know, when I listen to music, music has a cultural bias to it. But these natural soundscapes, like sounds of the ocean or sounds of the desert, sounds of the forests, where we grew up millions of years ago, and from which we emerged millennia ago, really have that same kind of resonance to them. They have no cultural bias because, and that's why you enjoy them so much. That's why we enjoy them so much and need them.
It's incredible.
They actually have healing properties.
I think I could feel it. I don't know what the wound is, but I guess we're all wounded, and it felt healing, and I felt so grateful for all the decades you've spent out there. I just want to listen and listen and listen with you, Bernie. You're a very special man, kind of artist, to bring this back, and it is so important. There's this great tape you got from, this is what, in the Amazon back in 1990. You were out, and there's a long stretch in this tape where you're just recording raindrops and insects and frogs and then suddenly your microphone was 30, 35 feet from you in the rainforest there. And suddenly, well, we'll just listen. Then you can tell us about it. But these are very sophisticated microphones. And here, after all this wonderful natural sound, very low key, comes this. Bernie, I was taken away with the backdrop itself, and then comes this creature. What is this? What's going on?
Well, we had, I had been out there with a colleague, actually from Harvard, and we'd gone out into the field late one night, around midnight. And we'd been walking for maybe 15 minutes or so, gone a kilometer from camp. And then we decided to split up and go into different directions. And I set my mics up after about a 10-minute walk, alone on the trail. I had noticed as we were walking that there was this odd odor that was coming from somewhere, and I didn't really know what it was coming from, but when I set up my mics, I found out. Mm-hmm. There was a jaguar that had been following us in the dark.
Wow.
And we didn't see it or hear it. But when I set up my mics, the jaguar came right, and it was scent marking. That's why we smelled it.
Mm-hmm.
And when I set up my mics, the animal came right up to the microphone and started to growl. Apparently, it was just checking things out.
Yeah.
I didn't see it because I was afraid to shine my flashlight on it and scare it. I didn't want to provoke anything more than the growl. And there it was.
Who needs to see it when you hear that so close? It's as though, with your microphone, it's as though it's right next to our ears.
That's exactly right. It scared me, let me tell you.
Oh, my gosh. You have a deep history in music and electronic music. I mean, you know your microphones. You know what you're taking into the field. That's part of why this is so vivid. You've got really high-quality recording going on here.
Yes. When I started, microphones and the equipment was very heavy. When I went into the field for a month, I'd have to take 170 pounds of equipment, batteries and tape. And now what's so wonderful about recording is anybody can do it. The recorders are very, very inexpensive, and they're at least as good as they were when I first started in the 1960s and early 70s. And the recorders, where I had to take 170 pounds of equipment for a month, now I can take 10 pounds and get the same amount of recording and recordings that are even better.
And Bernie Krause has taken it just about everywhere. We'll go from the polar ice caps practically to deep Amazon. Here's a little more. This was 8 years ago. Bernie Krause and his wife hiking in Ecuador on the eastern side of the Andes, just above the Amazon basin along the Rio Napo. They had a guide there, pointed to a hollow in a large fig tree. It housed two black baby vultures, small enough to fit in Bernie's hands, but listen to the sound. As he looked, he dropped a couple of pairs of microphones down into that hollow, and those baby vultures let out these roars. They really fit in the palm of your hand. They sound the size of dinosaurs there.
Yeah. Now, what's really interesting about that, Tom, is we always talk about animals, and the reason that they're different from humans is because they don't use tools.
Mm.
What these babies were doing at that early stage is they were using the length of the hollow of that fig tree as a resonator.
Kind of a trumpet, a tuba mouth.
To make their voices sound bigger.
Oh.
And that's how they did that.
I was just blown away by that. Do you have any idea what adults sound like, if that's what they can pull up out of the hollow of a fig tree?
That's interesting. I have no recordings of the adult. I just have the recordings of those little babies.
Did you see anything of Mama Vulture while you were there with your recording equipment in Ecuador?
No. Our guide knew where this was and just pointed to it, and that's how I got the sound.
We are so privileged to have you with us in all this recording this hour. We're going to dive into a lot more here. This is the opposite of earbuds that we're exercising this hour. This is ears wide open and open into the wild. Bernie Krause is with us. His new book is The Great Animal Orchestra, Finding the Origins of Music in the World's Wild Places. And he has been in many of them. And we're going to enjoy that in this hour behind us right here, recording along Big Sur. Big Sur on the California coast, a few hours south of San Francisco. Pfeiffer Beach, Christmas morning, 1990. We've got much more to come. Bernie Krause, please stand by there in California. I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. We'll be right back. I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point, and we're listening to nature this hour, to incredible creatures, soundscapes, to growls and gurgles, wind and water, dawn in the treetops, glaciers on the move, and more we will hear with Bernie Krause. He's made a career, a second career, and a long one, of recording the sounds of the natural world. Been at it for more than four decades now. Started in electronic music, recorded all kinds of human musicians, then moved right into nature. He's writing about it now. His great book is The Great Animal Orchestra, Finding the Origins of Music in the World's Wild Places, and we will hear that. And Bernie, you write about the danger to some of these soundscapes, but there's also some, behind us right now, the sound of nature's just unwillingness to give up. What have we been listening to?
Well, you know, nature always thrives for life, so it's going to, whatever we're going to do, we're going to hear that expression in the natural soundscape. But Aldo Leopold warned us, he said, you know, if you're going to tamper with nature, you better keep all the parts. I'd follow that up with saying, yeah, and you got to keep the diagrams and certainly the electrical diagrams to find out how all the parts are connected. And one of the things that we found with this natural soundscape and people who still have more closely connected to the natural world than we do, mm-hmm. is that they use that natural soundscape as a karaoke orchestra with which they perform. And that's and by which they develop their music. And mm-hmm. they learn their music from the animals. The animals taught us to dance and sing. And it's from this collective animal voice, that biophony is what I call it, all the animals when they sing together in a particular habitat. It's from these animal voices from the habitats we once lived in, that we picked out and imitated the rhythms and the melodies and the arrangements of sound as we heard them, because mm-hmm. humans are great mimics. And we incorporated these natural gifts into our musical expression, which in turn evolved into language.
We're going to hear
I just want to say, Tom, it wasn't the single voices that inspired us, although, you know, because we have a way of abstracting things out of context in the natural mm-hmm. world, mm-hmm. It was the collective voice that did it.
When you say orchestra, you really mean it, biophony, or it's that natural symphony.
It's the proto-orchestra. Mm-hmm. It's from those constructs that we got music. We learned orchestration, we learned rhythm, we learned melody, all of those things we got from the natural world. What we've done now with our music is we've boiled it down to what's accepted in academia. And it's kind of like Luc Ferry, the French philosopher, eco-philosopher, who said once, nature is beautiful when it imitates art.
I.e. Homo sapiens. I kind of like it as you found it. I mean, and I was fascinated.
Yeah, sure.
That soundscape we saw heard coming in here was from Chernobyl, no less. And this was years after the nuclear meltdown there. But you went back and put your recorders out there in 2006. You got wolf and moose and white-tailed eagle and black storks and frog and nightingale, and suddenly it's back. You know, if I may, Bernie, I want to roll through. You just got such great sound, and I want our listeners to enjoy it. Some of this stuff, I don't know how you got this, but this is the sound of a glacier on the move. You crawled into a crevasse in a glacier in southeast Alaska?
Yes, we did. It was the Hubbard Glacier just east of Yakutat, which is north of Glacier Bay.
Wow.
And one day I just figured out, well, if the glacier is moving, then it's got to put out some kind of sound. And so I crawled. I don't recommend this for anybody, but I crawled. Yeah, it's really stupid. But I was younger then.
Yeah.
And I crawled down into this crevasse and dropped a hydrophone into a little pool of water there and got the whole mass of the glacier, not the calving faces that make all those crashes and booms, but the whole mass of the glacier moving over the ground, forming the moraine.
Oh, it's
incredible. It moves several centimeters an hour.
Yeah, it's slow, but listen to this. And this one takes some patience, but it's worth it. Slow down to glacial pace. And here you are with Bernie Krause's microphone inside, under the glacier. Now, Bernie, if we were, I don't know, Neanderthal back in some kind of ice age, in some kind of melting pool near a glacier, could we have put our ear to the floor and heard that, or is this only through the magic of electronic recording?
I think it's probably more electronic recording, although I'll tell you, if you were a Neanderthal and had enough warm clothing, you could lie on the glacier and maybe get it through your body.
Yeah.
Hear that sound through your body, because the sound is so low, actually. Most of the sound that you've just played, you can't really hear, because it's down into what's called infrasound, something below what we can hear. But we can sure feel it physically.
Which becomes, at a certain point, almost the same when we're sure glad you've captured it. Vince in Youngstown, New York is calling. Vince, thanks for calling. You're on the air.
Hi, Tom.
Hi.
I live along the river in Youngstown, New York, and on occasion in the past, not this winter, but on the occasion in the past, my wife and I have gone down to our deck on the river.
This is the Niagara River. The Niagara River.
Niagara River.
Right?
Lower Niagara River, yeah.
Mm-hmm, yeah.
And on occasion, my wife and I have gone down to our deck, which is well below the roadway. And the ice flows make such a beautiful, eerie, but beautiful sound when they grind against each other as they move down the river in the winter and the early spring.
Is it a groaning sound, or how would you describe it, Vince?
It's a crystalline sound,
ah.
And it's just these chunks of ice that that grind the crystal structures across each other. It's just a very beautiful sound, and it's the only sound you can hear when you're down by the river at that time of year.
You're a lucky couple to hear it, and I appreciate your sharing it with us right after that glacier. That's just fantastic. Vince, keep listening. Annie in Nashville, they know how to listen.
Hi,
Tom. Hi, Annie, you're on.
Hi, I just wanted to make the point. I've been traveling a lot. I'm a musician here, but these sounds of nature are what calm me. And when I've been in Jackson Hole, Wyoming for the past year, but I just moved back to Nashville, and I would run by a trumpeter swan pond and take memos, like voice memos on my iPhone of the swans and other noises too, but mainly those, and they sound like, you know, a middle school horn section. And so, I don't know, I just really appreciate this.
You're from Nashville. Is it as good as music? Is it better than music? Is it just music?
Well, for me, I feel like there's so much man-made music here that my memos that I've taken in Jackson Hole, Wyoming, or even here at night, like just as the crickets in the summertime, like I listen to them when it almost cleanses my palate when I'm writing. It's really awesome.
Annie, I love your call. Thanks for that. We've got a lot of people writing in. Lars loves the spring peepers. Jennifer, the solitary owl after midnight. Michael, cicadas in the tree canopy, he says that, you know, on Facebook, he says they create a presence and a sensation that is more like weather. We heard that low rumble of the glacier. Let's hear life playing in some of those. And this is a sound recorded by Bernie Krause of orcas in Johnstone Strait between Vancouver and mainland British Columbia. I was just out that way last summer. What a beautiful area. Listen to the vitality of these orcas playing. Bernie, they get going. Woo. And I don't know if you're bringing us concentrated moments of this or just that's the way it was, Bernie.
That's the way it is, and it's often that way, Tom. You know, that morning I had awakened. I'd been on this island in the Straits there, and I was camped there, and I woke up, and there must have been, I swear, there must have been 100 dorsal fins just out of the water, yeah. And they were right in front of my camp.
Killer whales.
Killer whales, and I just dropped a hydrophone into the water and got that sound.
And you've also...
They're communicating with one another.
Yeah, and they listen as well. And you've got an example of that. Again, orcas here, but these not in the wild. These near Vancouver from the same whale pod. I guess this is taken to California's marine world. And you were out there one morning by the orca tank, the killer whale tank, and the seals were in a tank nearby, and they suddenly shut up. And one of the killer whales began to bark like a seal. You got 10 or 15 seconds. We've looped it here so we can appreciate it. But listen here. This is an orca who, it seems pretty clear, was listening to those seals, and now he's the same way we might whistle a Bob White. He's sort of talking their language.
And brings them in that way.
Orca imitates seal. We're not the only imitating creatures on this planet, Bernie.
Surely not. And they're doing that to bring the seals, to lure the seals in, so that they can feed on them.
Oh, okay. So this is not just the joy of music here. This is,
nope.
Come on over, beautiful.
No, there's a reason.
And I'll gobble you up. Here's another one. This was just incredible. In the 1980s, you started going up to southeastern Alaska, and I guess to hear what you were looking at tidal pools, dropped an underwater microphone into the soft mouth of an anemone, which devoured that microphone, and then you can hear, kicks it out. Here's the sound inside the sea anemone. Is that kicking you out, Bernie?
Yeah, get out of here. I don't want that microphone in my belly anymore.
That is somewhere I've never been. I mean, you really have gone north, south, east, west. We've got Sumatran storms coming up here, and you name it. This has been a deep life's work. You've made it.
Thank you.
It's beautiful. I want to get to one here that just is incredible. This is a March 2007, and this is up in Ontario, sort of on the same latitude as northern Michigan, a place called Algonquin Park, around 6 in the morning, low temperature, down in the 20s, Bernie out there alone, and wolves began howling from all directions, two packs nearby making their collective cases. Two packs of wolves in Ontario, 6 in the morning, 20 degrees. Were you frozen to the spot, Bernie? Did you run? Did you just thank your lucky stars for the sound?
Tom, I was absolutely astonished. I had a pack in front of me and a pack in back of me. And I had just managed to set up my mics and capture this, you know, display between the two packs. And someone actually came to my side at that point and said to me, "Aren't you scared?" I said, "No, man, I'm in heaven."
You must have been. It was
absolutely a divine moment.
It's eerie. It's beautiful. And this collection just goes on and on. Here from the rainforest of Borneo, this is 1991. The rain, thunder, and lightning coming on like a freight train. The Tanjung Harapan Forest. Tino's calling from Farmington, Connecticut. Tino, thanks for calling. You're on the air with Bernie Krause.
Hi, Tom. Hi, Bernie. It's Tino Triota.
Well, hello, Tino.
How are you?
Okay.
We grew up together in Detroit. I study hearing. He records hearing, and he records sounds and studies the other end of it, and I have colleagues who study hearing in animals, as I've done in the past. And we grew up together. Our parents did business together, and he's a wonderful, wonderful man.
I'd say so. What do you hear in these recordings, Tino? You're a hearing expert.
Well, I, of course, take it from a different angle, but the wonderful complexity of the sound temporally and in frequency or spectrally, and how the auditory system can parse the sounds and how it can sort it. And what I'm especially been interested professionally is when one is hearing in any environment, many different sources of sound, how the ear and the brain, and it is both of them, the ear and the brain, that sort of work together to be able to separate the sounds and to locate each of them simultaneously.
It's a gift to us that your old friend Bernie has taken his microphones out there, wouldn't you say?
I would certainly say that, and I've got colleagues that he probably knows at Maryland and other places who study the cortical responses, electrical responses in animals and birds of natural sounds. So it's the continuity of nature is also studied by the continuity of science.
Tino, I'm glad to connect you guys again, a long
thanks,
way from
Tino.
Old days in Detroit. Thanks for calling, Tino. Thank you very much. Gosh, Bernie, this is great. When we come back, we're going to hear your kind of a primal example of humans responding to the kind of sound, natural sound, wild sound that we're hearing in this hour. Bernie Krause is with us from California. He's been recording natural sound for years, really incredible sound. Behind us right here, early dawn, this is in the Adirondacks, soundscape of peepers and insects, birds, woodpecker comes in. I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. We'll be right back. I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. We're listening to nature this hour, to incredible creatures and soundscapes, growls and gurgles, wind and water and peeps, dawn in the treetops, glaciers on the move even. With Bernie Krause, he's made a great decades-long second career of recording natural sound, really undisturbed, full, rich, abundant natural sound, all over the world. He's written about it in his new book, The Great Animal Orchestra. You can join the conversation this hour at 800-423-8255. That's 800-423-TALK. He joins us today from California. Vernie, behind us here, this is Mono Lake, famous Mono Lake in California. Spring day, a vernal pool. It's just melted, and what are we hearing there?
You're hearing critters that you can't even see. These are water boatmen, insect larvae. They're microscopic, and they're creating these kinds of sounds. We just dropped a little hydrophone in the pool, and there they are. But what's interesting is those sounds can be heard in almost any standing pool of water that you can find. Pool by the curb after a rainstorm, by a still water in a lake near the shore, freshwater lakes, of course. But in any place in the world, you drop a hydrophone in the water and you're going to hear all the life that's in that water.
Often it's joyful. Sometimes it is sad. Here's one. This is a few years ago, spring day.
Yeah.
Game wardens blew up a beaver dam. This was in central Minnesota. And you report most of that beaver family was killed. And a fellow recordist captured the sound of a surviving, maybe wounded, male beaver circling the pond. This is sad, but here you go.
Yeah.
Bernie, is it anthropomorphizing to wonder if this beaver is not crying?
It's crying. And, Tom, that's the saddest sound in the animal kingdom I've ever heard. It's, people talk about animals having no emotion. Well, here's a perfectly good example of one that does. I have recordings of beavers that I've recorded over the years, like tail slaps and occasional grunts, but nothing like this. This is incredible. A guy by the name of Kurt Olson made this recording, by the way.
That's incredible. Kurt Olson
yeah.
captures something. I've never heard anything quite like it. Meg in Harwich, Massachusetts. Meg, you're on the air. Thank you for calling.
Hi.
Hi,
Tom.
Hi.
One of my favorite things is listening to the wind. That's the beauty of living down the Cape to me, besides the lovely environment.
Yeah.
It's the wind. I love it. One of the funniest things is in the 80s and the 90s, I used to listen to a tape. You remember what tapes were like?
Yes, I do.
And it was the sound of wind in a blizzard. And every night I listened to it in the 80s and the 90s, I think I wore out the tape. And then the power of the wind during the blizzard, every once in a while you'd hear a barn door slam.
Yeah.
It was great.
Yeah.
And when my nephew was going to UMass at final time, I sent him out a CD, and it was of Thunder and Lightning. And all the boys in the apartment set out the lights and listened to that, and they loved it.
There's
that's
nothing.
It.
That's it, and that's a world, that's a cosmos, Meg. There is nothing like it when you really let yourself listen. And wind, we've got some from Bernie here. It's not on Cape Cod, I'll tell you that. This happens to be from New Mexico at a barbed wire fence. He recorded the sound of wind, that sort of breathy whistle changing its pitch as it changes speed. Microphone low to the ground. Here it is. Wind over New Mexico. Arthur in Cambridge, Massachusetts. Arthur, thank you for calling. You're on the air.
Hi, Tom.
Hi.
Thanks for another extraordinary program. I just wanted to relate an experience in listening to nature that I had visiting a friend up in Vermont. And one afternoon felt I wanted to take a little nap, and I went out to lie on an old discarded picnic table under an old apple tree. And it was silent to begin with. I thought, this is wonderful.
Yeah.
And I began to hear all kinds of sounds, the rustling of leaves, the strange noises of what I thought were crickets, crackling twigs. It became sort of an overwhelming tide of sound, all very modest, very small, nothing dramatic like hurricane winds or crashing breakers, but I was transfixed by it. And every once in a while, a songbird would lie alight in the tree, looking for insects, I think. And By the time I was finished, instead of napping, I was totally awake listening to this very humble, modest symphony of sound.
Yeah.
And I kept going back out there to try to recapture it all. But that taught me how to listen.
You know, Tom, that's the caller makes an important point here.
Mm-hmm.
We can't record the sound of wind per se because microphones won't tolerate that kind of level. But we can record the effects of wind, the wind in the grasses, wind in the trees,
sure.
You know, the kinds of delicate fabric that the caller was talking about. And that's what's so important about being able to go out there and record this stuff and capturing it. Because that's, you know, it's so rare now to actually be able to hear it.
No kidding. Let's just keep listening. This is a little rainforest. This is a Chichagof Island, 65 miles northwest of Juneau in the Tongass National Forest. Just great, and close to that water. And while we're listening, I'm still thinking of Arthur under his apple tree with his doors of perception blown open there by natural sound. And all of this left me thinking, Bernie, about how we've changed, maybe. The way we listen has changed. I mean, most of us live in a world of human sound kind of imperialism. You know, it's just taken over, not least when we shove the earbuds in, and it's just typically human sound in there.
It is, and it's something that I call anthropony, and it's all the sounds that humans make. And, you know, the recording you just played, Tom, mm-hmm. is a recording of a rainforest as far north as Alaska. Most people think that rainforests are only tropical. They're not. They go all the way up the West Coast, mm-hmm. all the way as far north as way into Alaska, almost as far north as Anchorage.
Yeah, and beautiful sound right there.
Yeah.
I want to take us, well, let's get one more here. Maida in Newton, Massachusetts. And Maida, thanks. You're on the air.
Hello?
Hi, you're on, Maida.
Hi, Tom.
Hi.
I was just suddenly struck by what this show would be like without the sound clips and to have you describe each thing we're listening to in nature through words. Thinking about how we capture and communicate the sound, like a Neanderthal
yes.
laying on ice, and that the apple tree story, and even through that iPhone, like a woman said, I'm about to be backpacking in South America, starting in Tierra del Fuego and moving north to Peru. I like to write, but I'm wondering, you know, how do we capture sound to bring home to my family here in Newton? How do I convey it? And is there any advice for an easy way to record while backpacking?
Sure. Maida, there are a number of very light, like 6 ounces, 8 ounce little recorders now that you can buy for $200, around $200. And they're fabulous recorders, and they're easy to carry. The batteries last 20 hours at a time, and these are just a couple of little batteries, couple of AA's. And you can do that really easily. And I would advise you to really look on the internet and find something that looks easy to use. And they're all very easy to use, and they're fabulous recorders. And the other thing I wanted to point out is you're right about the fact that, you know, you couldn't describe this program in words. One of the things that I've attempted to do in the Great Animal Orchestra is to begin to define sound and put words around sound that are descriptive so that we have a better idea, a better way of languaging the subject of listening and sound.
And you do it very well, right alongside all this captured sound. Here, heavy, wet snowflakes here during a May snowstorm in Jackson Hole, Wyoming, with Bernie's microphones attached to branches of a low-lying bush. This is on the border of Teton National Park. We've looped it a little bit to let you hear more of it. And we're right down there in that kind of clicky, wet snowstorm. Beth in Westboro is calling. Beth, thanks for calling. You're on the air.
Hi, Tom. Hi. I just wanted to relay an experience that I had while I was in Scandinavia looking at some friezes outside of churches. And I heard this humming off in the distance outside. And it was the most profound sound I ever heard in my life, and I had to follow it, and I traced it to this giant, I believe it was a linden tree, covered with bees. It was just magical and moving, and it was coupled with the fragrance of the linden blossoms, which just propelled me to a totally different place.
I'm glad you shared that, the sound and the fragrance all together. I just love it. Here's from David. He says, living in northern Vermont, he's exposed to extraordinary natural sound. Some of his favorites, the drumming sound of a male ruffed grouse announcing his territory, calling his hens, the hermit thrush's song, and he says, perhaps my favorite on a still winter's night, the crinkling hiss of snow falling through the boughs of fir trees. We got a little Grand Teton version of that right there. Bernie takes us to that intersection of all this natural sound and humans, and there's just incredible sound here. We're going to play it now. Seemed to best illustrate it to me. This is the Bayaka Pygmies. They've lived in southwest of the Central African Republic for many thousands of years. Ancestral home, kind of a swampy site they share with forest elephants. Louis Sarno has lived and recorded there since the mid-'80s, and he discovered that they use the sound of the forest as a kind of a karaoke orchestra behind them. You can hear them. You'll hear the first, just the natural sound, and then in come the sound of the pygmy creating and performing in the midst of all that. Bernie, is this it? Is this that kind of intersection of Homo sapien and your biophony?
That's exactly right, Tom. Think of that. With those women singing in the background, they're gathering seeds. Think of those women singing in the background as using the sounds of the forest as their backup band.
Singing? And it's not a flute? It's just their somehow...
No, they're singing.
They're vocalizing that haunting... flutish
sound? Yes, way in the background, and they're vocalizing that echoey sound as their vocalizations, and they're vocalizing to the sounds and with the sounds of the forest. That's how we got our music. And it's very much more complex than anything, you know, we've managed to create at Juilliard or Eastman School of Music or any of the stuff that we've structured in the West. That's why I'm so fascinated by it, because it's so complex and it's so rich.
And so closely woven. I mean, they're not trying to run 1,000 miles from the natural sound. They're really interweaving with it.
Exactly. And there's no ego there. They aren't composers. They aren't musicians. They aren't trained. They haven't got degrees, all that stuff. They're just living with the life around them. And they're expressing themselves through that life. That's what's so wonderful about it.
You've been recording so much for so long now, so many years. I mean, you may have the biggest private recording of nature as we've known it, but I read in the book, Bernie, you're saying that a huge portion of this biophony that you've recorded, if you went back there now, a lot of it's gone.
Almost 50% of it is gone. I've been recording 44 years now, and 50% of what I have in my archive is gone. And by the way, I'm looking for a home for this archive, if anybody knows of one.
What do we lose if we lose the full abundance of that biophony?
Well, we lose a connection to the natural world. And as Richard Louv, the guy who wrote Last Child in the Woods, you know, he created the expression nature deficit disorder. And, you know, our culture really suffers from that. We don't get out enough. We don't listen enough. If we do go out, we go out to conquer, you know, to ski faster or climb higher or dive deeper and, you know, or race cars louder. And we're not spending really much time thinking about the part of the world and the natural world in particular, that supports us and keeps us alive and vital and sane.
Sane and a little more sane the deeper we get into that biophony. Bernie Krause, we've just got people just keep responding here. I mean, everybody starts thinking about it and feeling it. Christine with Wind in the Trees. Jonathan, the sound of Brazilian free-tailed bats returning to their roost en masse. One of the coolest sounds I've ever heard, he writes us on Facebook, like hundreds of zippers raining from the dark. Barbara and frogs, Annie, with the wind wrapping around your body when you're out in the open, and horses eating hay. Bernie Krause, we're really grateful to you for taking yourself and your recording equipment out into all this wonderment for so long and bringing it back so richly. And we're grateful to you for being with us this hour. It's just been extraordinary. Thank you so very much.
Thank you, Tom. Thank you.
Bernie Krause's terrific new book is The Great Animal Orchestra, Finding the Origins of Music in the World's Wild Places. And I should say you can read an excerpt and hear some of this sound at our website, onpointradio.org. Sound behind us right here from the Arctic National Wildlife Refuge, late spring 2006. Bernie out there at Timber Lake with tree sparrows and white-crowned sparrows and savannah sparrows and American robins and hoary redpolls and lesser yellowlegs and upland sandpipers. Don't call it empty. Listeners, thanks for joining us this hour. I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point.